Exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing how you took that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Welcome to the Halloween episode, or really Radio Show 30 for Friday, October 31st, 2014. And yes, my voice is horribly deep. Some of you might like that, but hey, I'm sick. Deal with it. So,
do not adjust your radio set.
No, we control the horizontal and the vertical. Oh wait, that's out of limits. Anyway,
These days you'd have to control the interlacing.
Oh man, it'd be so messed up. Yeah, that show would just not work out. But we'd have to change the entire intro for the Outer Limits. We'll do that later. So, how's your Halloween been, guys? Mine's been hellaciously busy.
Here's the thing about my Halloween. Everybody I know works Halloween Horror Nights, so they don't actually have Halloween's.
But like
so
a whole month of
if
Halloween.
If we're gonna have like a Halloween party at some time, it's gonna be sometime next month. So I have been drinking and watching horror movies, and that's about it.
Well, happy Halloween to you.
And okay, we watched a bunch of 16 and Pregnant, and then we followed that up with a documentary on the porn industry.
My God, how horrible for you! That is an absolute horror show.
Really, really scary.
Especially the 16 and Pregnant thing. Why have you done that to yourself?
Claire picks the shows.
Well, there's your problem. Right. That was your first mistake.
All right, fair enough. Don,
but I don't watch much TV, so.
Yeah, TV, yeah.
She didn't turn it on. I generally don't.
It's on for other people, yeah. Don, I see that you're all dressed up like you're there to swallow souls.
Yeah. We were outside.
Or steal some droids.
Yeah, you could be a little bit. Could be a little bit sand person.
We were outside.
Yeah.
Anna was handing out candy, and I was scaring the little kids so much that they wouldn't come anywhere close.
Excellent. So that way you can eat all the candy yourself.
Exactly.
Oh, that reminds me. As soon as the show is over, I got to run down to the Walmart because that candy goes on sale. $11.59, motherfuckers.
Really? Wow. Well, there you go. So that was the voice.
Talking up for next year?
That was the voice of Michael. That was the voice of David.
That's what we tell ourselves. This is for next year.
Well, you guys, you guys just aren't even going to let me introduce you, are you?
No.
Okay, I'm Andy. If you couldn't recognize my voice, we've got Don, we've got Ann, we've got Michael, and we've got David, and it's Halloween. Yay! Hoopla!
Right.
Yes, and my voice is brought to you by really spiked apple cider. And lots of drugs. So there we go. So some weird errata. Back in 2012, I started a blog for a little project that I did with Can We Fix It? And that blog has now been brought over to the O'Reilly Radio family of products. And it actually got some traction. Some people were actually reposting it, which I was kind of surprised about. Yeah, but, you know, 2 years, that's all it took for somebody to take notice that I wrote something on Halloween. It's actually a pretty decent critique of how Halloween got to where it is today, where it came from, you know, the Samhain, you know, early Celtic festivals, all the way through what the Romans did to it and everything. So if you want to go take a look at that, there's going to be a link in the show notes, or you could just right on the top of the webpage, just type in Halloween, and it'll be Topic Tuesday, number 15, 2012, October 30th, All Hallows Eve. I would probably like go ahead and read it, but my voice just isn't going to be up for that. So read it yourselves. It's wonderful, including lots of links as to where I got all that information so that you can dig deeper, as you should. That's what she said. Speaking of things that that dug deeper, there's not really a whole lot of news that I wanted to cover except for some weird bits. Virgin Galactic, which is basically it's the only real commercial airline space plane industry headed by Richard Branson of Virgin Atlantic. He's like, if Elon Musk is Tony Stark Iron Man, I would kind of think that Richard Branson would be maybe Batman. I mean, they're right there in kind of the same vein of really smart, really rich guys.
It seems like there's also a whole plethora of rich, smart guys in the anti-hero kind of category, like Lex Luthor.
Well, yeah. But of course that's usually they either have like a really wicked goatee or they're bald. So,
he's got a wicked goatee.
He does, but he has a really long hair, and that's usually like that's maybe an anti-hero. Not really a villain, not really a hero. Somebody that you could go either way with. That might be Richard Branson. But unfortunately, he had a couple space planes. And I mean, we're talking about spaceships here. Like real kind of legitimate commercial spaceships. Unfortunately, one of them crashed today, and the pilot was killed, and there were several injuries.
There was two people on board. There was the pilot, co-pilot. They both ejected. One died. One's in critical.
There you go.
This is the news that I was able to drum up on that.
Yeah, exactly. I always say I've got it around here somewhere. Anyway, yes. So that's some sad news. Obviously, it's a setback, but if we think about all the test flights and all the horrible crashes that happened when we were just trying to break the sound barrier. This is just.
Yeah. I did a brief
setback
report on Chuck Yeager back in the day, and just looking at all of the deaths that happened and all the destruction, I was like, this guy was a crazy motherfucker just to get in a test plane.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The test flights are absolutely insane. The Bell X-1, for instance. Why would you ever get yourself into that?
I don't know.
Speaking of that, of the Bell X-1, the day that he went and broke the sound barrier, the day before, he had broken several ribs in a horse riding accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in order to get in, A, he didn't tell anybody. B, he had to saw off part of a mop handle so he could close the damn door when he got inside. And then he goes out and does it.
Yeah.
Test pilots are a crazy, crazy breed of people.
They are a crazy crowd.
Brass fucking balls, man.
And I'm very proud of them.
Reading about the history of the X-planes themselves, you know, all of them were built to answer a question. Can we do this? Or is this design better than that design? And if so, let's test it out and find out why or how we might do better. And there are times when the answer to that is no, it's not better. You're stuck in the air in this thing that doesn't fly so well. So good luck putting it down.
Yeah, they're
because you don't have options.
A lot of them are barely made to fly. Landing, that's optional. That's really optional.
All that requires for it to be a landing is that you can walk away from it.
And you can do that if you eject.
Yeah.
Sure.
To be honest, most of the time they really want you to bring the airplane back.
Yes.
Because it's expensive.
But sometimes the airplane is optional.
True. True. As long as the black box is saved somewhere. That's really what they wanted. Yeah. Now, also, speaking of things that are close to space and things that blew up, recently, a Antares rocket, which was, let's see, unmanned NASA contracted rocket for the International Space Station resupply mission. It blowed up.
It went kaboom.
Prior to impacting the ground, the rocket's flight termination system was engaged by the designated official in the Wallops Range Control Center. Apparently, something was amiss, and they detonated the rocket.
Usually that's an off-course kind of
situation. It happened so quickly, though. They haven't really said exactly what happened, because it was barely off the launch pad when they did it. Usually, they'll let it go a bit farther because there's a lot of error correction that both the onboard systems and, of course, the mission control systems can do to correct the course in flight. There's a lot of wiggle room there. Of course, when I say a lot of wiggle room, to a NASA engineer is microns.
Yeah, of wiggle room in something like this scenario is fractions that are almost that can't be seen with the naked eye. I mean, I could certainly see this being one of those situations where because they all started as government operations, and I know how high danger government systems work is that the operator has these things called immediate actions, where if you see this set of circumstances, you do this. You do not inform anyone. You do not ask for permission. No, you do this and tell them this is what you're doing, and they can't do anything about it. So I can imagine some operator there being like, I see this going really bad if I don't push a button in the next half a second. So he pushed the button.
That's pretty much what happens.
There was with the older rocket programs, I knew this was true. I don't know how they do this now, but they actually had like a window and they had like an overlay on it that from their position, this is the path the rocket should take.
Mm-hmm.
And they had lines on the sides of it. And if the rocket went outside those lines, they blew it up.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm familiar with too.
From your view, this is what you should see, and if it's not this, you hit the little red button.
Yeah. Yeah, if you do not see this, Shit has gone wrong.
This gets real right then. Yeah. And the reason for that is so that it doesn't land in populated areas and cause lots of havoc.
And since this happened up in Virginia and not down here in Cape Canaveral, I can definitely see where that margin of error would be much narrower. As it didn't even get that far off the ground, and yet CNN affiliate Wavy reports residents on nearby Chinatogi Island in Virginia found pieces of debris on their lawns.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't even that far away. NASA warns the debris could be dangerous and urges anyone that finds any to stay away from it and call 757-824-1295.
Yes, I would like to point out that these things often have, like, little nuclear reactors and things like that. Just little ones.
Tiny, so tiny.
It's but not even that. Really, it's the chemicals that you launch some of them. It's the hydrogen.
This stuff is toxic and potentially radioactive and incredibly dangerous, so don't touch it.
Yeah. Well, it was also,
it's rocket fuel.
It also contained a satellite, which probably did have a...
No. This was
a resupply mission for the ISS.
This was a rocket. The rocket and its Cygnus cargo module were carrying 5,000 pounds of supply and experiments for the International Space Station.
In all likelihood, the second stage for the suckers run off of hydrazine, which they can get to burn in space. And that shit will kill you if you breathe enough of it to smell it.
And what I read, it was also carrying a satellite as well, as on top of the 5,500 pounds of supplies.
I don't think it was a satellite.
They had a miniature satellite launcher on the ISS. I don't know if it's still there.
Oh, yeah,
but they're actually shooting little satellites out of it. And at one point, the ISS shot, like, two satellites told to do so.
Yeah, some of them were being shot accidentally.
Software glitch. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that was a fun little story that not a lot of agencies covered. So it might have had some of those smaller satellite modules. I mean, we're talking like less than a meter apiece, way less than a meter, like maybe 1 foot by 1 foot.
From what I understood, these things are like shoebox sized satellites.
Yeah.
Some sort of research project.
Now, it still costs like $500,000 to put an experiment in one of those. So, I mean, we're not talking chump change, but definitely much, much less entry level to get it into space. So there may have been several of those as, quote, experiments for the ISS. So, they're not going to tell us. What they did say, however, was that about 4 months worth of Mark Kelly's clothes and a bunch of his food were lost.
Uh-oh.
Oops.
So, yeah, there's a couple twins that are working up there, the Kelly brothers. Fun stuff. Somebody also had an opinion piece on CNN. Rockets blow up, we move on. And that's what we're going to do. Other news that's worth talking about. Recently, Pope Francis declared that evolution and the Big Bang Theory are correct, and that God isn't a magician with a magic wand. This essentially, you know, of course, this hit the internet like wildfire and has been everywhere.
Yes.
However... It bears reminding people that the Catholic Church has agreed with the Big Bang Theory and evolution since 1989. Just thought I'd mention that this
we lost Mike.
Oh.
Oh no, we lost Mike.
Oh, and on this, he better come back. He'll come back, I'm sure. But yeah, since 1989, the Catholic Church has had these things already in place as this is real, this is what we have to go with, because it's proven science, and, well, amazingly enough, the church doctrine can't come up with a better answer. So they had to adapt. Congratulations for adapting. However,
I don't think that they should come up with a better... I don't think that they could come up with a better answer, nor should they, because they would have to manipulate text written by people who had no understanding of modern science to say, hey, it's in here.
Yeah, it would be, they'd have to manipulate things to match the new facts. And basically they chose to go with the facts and keep them static. So that's
now, there are those people who can read into it and they can make that stretch of their imagination in mind and say, oh, this is what they were talking about.
That's true. Yeah. And it doesn't seem to be much of a stretch for many people to do same.
And if you are one of those people, fine, great. The Bible proves evolution. It's still evolution.
Yeah. So there's that. Now it's interesting though that this is, of course, caught fire again. You know, that apparently the earlier note was I guess a footnote on history that the Catholic Church was advancing on this. Mm-hmm. And of course many of the other Christian organizations have not kept up, and many of the others have. I know that the Methodist Church, for instance, part of its doctrine is acceptance of science in general. Mm-hmm. Though not so much with the Pentecostals or the Baptists. Not so much there. I keep looking for that link. I found one that had the statements of what each belief actually bought into, how much science they were actually accepting of, you know, where they based reality in. And that's, mm-hmm. that's where I got, it's like, okay, the Methodists believe, yes, science good. The Catholics, oh yeah, they believe, okay, science good. And various on down the line. But I can't find it anymore. So if any of you out there in Internetlandia, can come up with that link, go ahead and send it into the show. Give us some feedback. That'd be oreillyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You could also call us at 470-222-6759, or you can also hit us up on any of the, at just anywhere. We're everywhere. We're out on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. Just go hit us everywhere. Up somewhere and tell us, give us some feedback. Tell us about this. But what do you guys think about this? Is this really newsworthy? I mean, it's just restating something that was already a doctrinal piece.
It's newsworthy. We do have to talk about it because people are still debating this amazing stuff. We have, you know, I think it's 10 or 11% of the population believes in creationism.
I think it's higher than that, actually.
The literal... You know, Earth was created in 6 days, and those are 6 days as we know them. And, you know, the Earth is only about 6,000 years old, and there's no such thing as evolution. And at one point, dinosaurs existed with man, and the devil buried the stuff in, under rock and whatnot to make it look like a lot of time had passed. It's all a great big deception. That's how they explain everything. And it's like, it's a far reach for me to believe that supernatural beings have gone through great pains to hide evidence to make it look like the Earth is old when it's not.
Yeah.
And it seems like something that with our scientific knowledge and capabilities, we might have figured out by now. Where that's at.
Well, we've definitely come up with a lot. Michael, are you able to hear us at all?
I am. Now that I have shut down video and got myself to the lowest bandwidth usage settings, everything is fine for the moment.
Whoa,
I don't know what kind of shit fit my computer is throwing, but it's not happy.
Damn you, shit fits on computers. Damn you. Well, you missed a little bit of what we're talking about because Pope Francis has reiterated, as if it for the first time, that the Catholic Church now believes in evolution, the Big Bang Theory, and that God is not a magician with a magic wand, which has been, as far as I'm aware, the Catholic doctrine since, like, 1989.
Something like that.
You know, because of, you know, the Jesuits are an amazing organization that have some, like, really serious scientists. I mean, serious scientists in them. And they're all on board with science.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no science denialism actually coming from the Catholic Church anymore. And one of the things also that Francis has been on board with is climate change. Which, hey, good on you. You know, yeah, we're screwing up the Earth. We probably ought not to do that.
There's actually a Cracked article where they referenced the Koch brothers and climate change, and they dropped $61 million into the lap of a climate change skeptic. It was a scientist who was very vocal. He's part of the 3% that did not agree. And he was studying all the facts and figures that the other guys had come up with, looking for the errors, saying, okay, here's where they blew it out of proportion. They dropped him $61 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Koch brothers gave him they're the single largest donor to this guy's research. And at the end of it, the climate change denial group lost a member. He was thoroughly convinced and went on to say that not only was climate change real, but it is definitely our fault. That was the conclusions he came up to after getting $61 million in funding in a group that has a vested interest in disproving climate change because it is bad for their industry.
You know what I got to say about that? Peer review, bitches. Peer review. And it worked. There you go.
Yep. Really?
Fuck off. But that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Go ahead, Koch brothers. Go ahead. Pour more money.
Yeah, please.
Into
please
it and
fund more research. You
know, yeah.
Fund more research. Yeah, because in the end,
that you can't solve every problem by throwing money at it.
And you can prove that by donating to us at patreon.com.
Yeah.
50 million will be okay. You know, you need the whole 60.
50 million will be fantastic. I will probably say anything you want.
Send a check. We'll fill in the pertinent details as to where it should be deposited.
It's fine. Yeah, just fill in the amount and for the who it's to, just, leave that blank. It's fine. No big deal. and you know what? I'll probably say anything you want. I think I have a price, and 50 million sounds like a good price.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I got a price.
Yeah, if I'm going to go back on morals and ethics and everything else, I am going to have enough money to live forever.
Yeah.
Or to the end of my life, essentially. That's my price.
There could be a nice retirement really quickly after that. Yeah. So, and that's one of those fun things that we get to talk about tonight, because we're Halloween. Back on topic. What is Halloween other than mocking what we fear? You know, we play with it. We dress it up like how Don was dressed up as
sand purple,
whatever you were tonight.
Cool death, whatever.
Yeah.
Don't just let it happen.
Angel of darkness, whatever you happen to have been. With all these things, all we're doing is we're propping up death so that we can laugh at it. The things that we fear the most, so that we can face them, laugh at them, and move on. It's a fantastic time of year, and we should all do it. We should all face our fears and laugh at them. And death is, it's unfortunately a fact of life that, you're born, you're going to die. You know, those things go hand in hand. The yin and the yang, the blah, 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 the blah, yada.
Yeah, one of my friends told me the joke of life is a sexually transmitted disease with a 100% fatality rate.
True enough. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And that's just the way it is. So with this, after death, Don, you found this. After death, 8 burial alternatives that are going mainstream.
Yeah.
Do you save my voice. Talk for me.
Yeah, hard time reading. Okay, there's natural burial, of course. Let's see, eternal reefs. I believe that's where you get poured into a reef-type structure, coral-like thing, and put under the put in a reef area to support wildlife or oceanic life.
Like a starfish.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the first one?
Resomation.
Resomation is you are liquefied. They put you in a heated water and potassium hydroxide. You liquefy the body, leaving only bones. The bones are then pulverized, much as in regular cremation, and the bone fragments are returned to family.
That's the one I was trying to think of earlier with one of the probably more disgusting ways.
Liquefied.
I don't know if cremation would actually sound better. Most of these other ones, I think, are
the resumation is probably more environmentally friendly.
I think that's what they were saying.
Gases from the burn, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of carbon in.
They say it's less
carbon-based life.
Less energy intensive. In addition, filings and other medical transplants can be removed from the bone before the liquid is dumped into the municipal wastewater system.
Oh, okay.
You are
fantastic.
You are poured down a drain and a box that that your relatives can pretend is you is then delivered. Yes.
It's your phones.
Yes. Cryonics. That's making a comeback, apparently.
It said you can have a head only preservation for $80,000.
Hey, there we go. That's a budget. You can have your head saved and just your head.
Yeah. Or $200,000 for the whole body.
I'm telling you, man, they're gonna be able to 3D print you a body at some point. I think.
Oh yeah.
Probably true. Now, for those that are unaware. For those that are unaware, cryonics is the process of freezing bodily tissue in a way that would then allow for it to be unfrozen, you know, thawed out properly, in theory, to allow someone to, with the advances of medical science, resuscitate you.
The next one goes on to what we were talking about before with space and space burial. If cryonics sounds too expensive, they still like the afterlife to smack of sci-fi. Excuse me. You can always get some of your ashes shot into space. Your cremated remains will hitch a ride on a rocket already headed for the stars.
Buried in space.
How do you know they actually do that, though?
Only 1 to 7 grams, 0.4 to 0.25 ounces. Of her remains are launched, so they're not adding too much weight to the rocket.
Yeah, shit where that guy was storing up dead bodies in some freaking shed and telling people they were freaking burnt or whatever.
No.
It looks like we have unfortunately lost Mr. Robinson. He is having network issues, but we will carry on without him unless he is able to restore his connection. So burial in space, mummification.
Yeah, that's another one. I guess that's coming back. Hey,
not just for ancient Egyptians anymore.
Only $63,000.
Well, that's cheaper than having your head frozen. So there's that.
And your DNA is preserved, so if they do find a way to clone and everything, they can still come back. Or your body can come back.
Your body can come back, yeah. Not so much your brain, because that doesn't actually happen.
Plastination.
Plastination, that's some cool stuff. Now, you may have seen the human body exhibits, where they had like all the veins or like half the body, you know, and you get to see the cross sections and everything. That's essentially what this process is. It basically turns the tissue into plastic.
That would be kind of interesting and actually kind of a neat way to go or after you go.
Yeah, it's essentially donating your body to science. That's basically what that process is because, oh, look, there's no price tag.
Yeah, the new the next one is and the last one is freeze drying.
Yeah, you can be space ice cream.
Dippin' Dots.
No sir.
No, this is not Dippin' Dots. This is the dehydrated ice cream. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Astronaut ice cream.
That awful, terrible stuff that shouldn't exist but does.
And yet,
why would you call this ice cream? Fuck you.
And yet, it's still one of those things that it's like, yeah, I still want it. I still want it. It's like, I know it,
but I want it to be good.
It's like, I know it tastes weird and all.
What self-respecting engineer made this?
The one that said, hey, we can do this.
And we can sell it.
I'm not saying it's a good idea, but we can do this. Now, this also can basically, then you can have on your like on a little card or something that accompanies your freeze dried body. No, sir, I am a meat popsicle.
Nice.
So just a little thing. Uh-huh. Yeah. It looks basically like either a normal burial or just being cremated is still probably the cheapest way to go. Cremation is like $550 on average.
Yeah.
Crackle, 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 and then they give you a box that the relatives can pretend is you.
Well, and there's a number of others that they don't mention on here. The one that they do mention is the Eternal Reef. That's where they take your cremated remains and pour you into something. They also do that with trees and a number of other things as well, where you can be put into the soil of a new tree, so you'll be kind of part of the tree. Yeah.
Which is also very cool. And there's one that that didn't make the list, but is one that I'm aware of that I was kind of thinking about doing. And that is having your essentially cremated remains fused into a semi-precious diamond-like stone, like a cubic zirconia or industrial diamond.
We have lab-manufactured diamonds, so I'm assuming they can extract carbon from your body and...
Yeah, basically that's, you are then turned into a stone.
And shine then, bright like a diamond.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Which is cool because then you have become a family heirloom. Which I think
that's a beautiful wedding ring. How big is that stone? Oh, it's my grandfather.
Hey, I don't care. That's a great story.
It was your grandfather's?
No.
It was my grandfather.
No, it's granddad. It's granddad. He's here with me always.
And what if the you, granddad. Like, break up and shit and then takes off with your grandma? I mean, your grandpa.
Shit happens. Shit happens. But
That's why you keep the stone on your own ring.
Yeah. You could do that, yeah. There's a lot of interesting etiquette when you get divorced and things like that as to, you know, if it was a family heirloom, tradition and decorum usually indicates that you give the ring back to the family that it came from if things didn't work out.
The candle back.
Yeah. In fact, I think there have been several lawsuits where that was still something that happened. You know, if it was a family heirloom.
Back.
Yeah, you did
get all young Frankenstein on you.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, for any young listeners out there, and you're considering doing that, just you might even want to draw up a very quick prenup just to get it out of the way. That the ring goes back to the family of origin. Okay. Just get that out of the way initially. Have it quick signed. Whatever. It's a good idea. Okay. Just take my word for it. I do not have to deal with that, but I don't think that you should have to deal with that either. Okay, moving on. So, nice.
Also watch a bunch of 16 and Pregnant, because that'll tell you all a shitload about relationships and how they fail.
Yeah.
just a fail train of failed relationships. That's pretty much what that show's about.
You ever see the movie Very Bad Things? You ever see that movie?
What was it?
Very Bad Things.
Very Bad Things, no.
It is a train wreck of a movie.
Hmm.
It is an absolute train wreck of a movie. It is horrible in every way, shape, and form. Basically about why these things are happening to these people. Why are you carrying on this line of reasoning? Why is this happening? I had it on VHS, back in the day, you know, good old Blockbuster rental, and I had to stop it and go take a walk and really ask myself whether or not I wanted to continue watching the movie. And I did, because it was a train wreck and you cannot take your eyes off it.
Yeah, you can't stop. You can't stop a train, baby.
You can't stop it, no. So, yeah.
There's a kind of a train wreck of a book, and it's tough read because it's basically the results of research. But it's called Games People Play. And it's hard to read because you will be reading this book and you'll be like, I do that. And I do not like that I know that I do that now.
Oh. Games people play.
Games people play.
Okay,
it's an older book, but it's, you know, they did try to make it humorous, but it's like you'll be going through this and you're just like, fuck.
Hmm.
All right, let me start making a list.
Okay. All right, I've added that to our show notes. Games people play, you know, for the masochist in us all.
Yes. So,
speaking of masochism and death and all these things, Brittany Maynard has chosen a way out of life, death with dignity. And this is kind of a contentious point for an awful lot of people dealing with death and all. And it harkens back to all the Kevorkian, you know, doctor-assisted suicides and things like that. We have a real problem with letting go of life.
Not as a species. In general, specifically human life, because we euthanize
everything
our
else.
Pets
when
they are suffering. But if you're a human being, you fucking suck it up and take it.
Yeah. Now, Brittany, her dilemma, if you have been under a rock and have not heard, she's 29 years old, and she has been diagnosed with a terminally ill brain cancer. And, well, she doesn't have a whole lot of time, so she's gone through her bucket list. She's already checked it all off. And, well, let's see. She said,
She had to move states. She was in California, and she ended up to going,
Oregon?
Oregon or Ohio is an O state. Oregon. No, that's Oregon. What?
Explain why she uprooted her life and moved to Oregon with her husband several months ago. Maynard said that she
So she went to Oregon because they actually have essentially a suicide pill that you can get as a prescription. You have to go back through an entire process. She had to go see doctors. They had to go check out her brain cancer again, take another look at it. They got a second opinion essentially and said, yeah, you're going to die. And there's nothing we can do to stop it. And the only thing that we can do for her is full brain radiation, where they would essentially cook her head and her hair would be singed out, and she would probably go through a series of, you know, emotional changes. Because they're basically, you know, they're literally cooking her brain. And at the end of it, she will still die.
States where
right even save her life.
Yeah. In states where right to die laws aren't on the books, this would be Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. Patients sometimes take their own lives in a violent manner, while they're still strong enough to do so. And, it's amazing that we have no compassion for those that are terminally ill. Instead, we put them into hospice care and dope them to death, basically. But not to death. To death in more of the figurative manner. We let them just kind of float away slowly.
Stew for a long period of time or short, depending.
Yeah. They just kind of fade away in horrible, horrible ways.
Yeah, basically her brain would be eaten by the cancer and her body would, you know, the rest of the systems are still functional. You know, her heart's still pumping, lungs are still breathing because some of those features are on a deeper level. A lot of them are brain stem. So, take a long time before that shit shuts down, but basically she would stop being a person for a long time and then eventually her body would pass.
Yeah.
And dignity.
Yeah. She would no longer have, you know, bowel control of any sort, bladder control of any sort. She can't feed herself. She cannot, you know, she will no longer at some point be able to recognize her friends and family. She will no longer be able to speak or walk. And we're talking, you know, this is just a progression that she will go through, and most states will force her to go through that rather than letting her end the suffering.
And by most, it's 47 other states. Now, most of the right to life kind of organizations, that, let's say there's an organization called Not Dead Yet, that it argues that these, assisted suicides often look acceptable when focusing on a single patient, very much like Brittany. But then, of course, they go into, however, not every terminal prognosis is correct. Not everyone's doctors know how to deliver expert palliative care, and not everyone has a loving husband and family. That doesn't really make it better to let someone suffer to death. Because that's really what it is, isn't it?
It's suffering. If you want to put second opinions in there, or even third opinions, and say, okay, here's the, I'm perfectly fine with saying, okay, here's the progression of steps. And once we've got, let's say, three is a magic number for a lot of things. Let's say you got three doctors. You had your primary doctor who made the initial assessment. You're going to die. You got a secondary doctor who looks over the same information and concurs. You get a third doctor to do it. You have a right to take control of when that death is going to occur. And I think, you know, reading her words and how she described this was what kind of, it was a really touching thing, because it was, she, once she had the prescription in hand, it was actually a source of comfort for her. It was an empowering thing that if my suffering becomes so great that I can't bear it anymore, I can stop it.
Yeah, you have that way out. It's an exit strategy.
It is an exit strategy.
Let's see. There's a note from Brittany. Let's see.
And if by some chance she doesn't, and by some chance she miraculously gets better, I'm getting better.
Every day in every way?
That would certainly be a miracle.
Would be a miracle.
Bring out your dead.
Yeah. Let's see now. Better. Now, what she has said here, as a note from her on thebrittanyfund.org, the response from all of you has surpassed our wildest expectations. On behalf of my family, thank you for the outpouring of love and support. This journey has been challenging, to say the least. We've uprooted our lives. I take prescription drugs to reduce the swelling in my brain that has caused my entire body to swell instead. Dan and I have given up our dream of having a family. My mother is soon to lose her only child. We can all agree that no parent should bury their child. I didn't launch this campaign because I wanted attention. In fact, it's hard for me to process it all. I did this because I want to see a world where everyone has access to death with dignity, as I have had. My journey is easier because of this choice. I'm so lucky to have known the love of an amazing husband. My husband Dan is a hero. A loving, caring mother, and an incredible group of friends and extended family. As my time draws closer, I hope you will all take up my request to carry on this work and support them as they carry on my legacy. I'm so grateful to you all. Brittany Maynard. And of course, there's lots more from Brittany and all about her, but really this is not about just her. She simply is the focal point of a movement that is, it's
been
really
building up steam for a while.
It's resonating with the generation known as millennials, which I guess is people slightly younger than us. And it's interesting that every generation kind of has these little pivotal moments where it's kind of a slight, not entire paradigm shift of attitudes towards something that was completely taboo in a previous generation. So talking about suicide in general was always taboo for, I know my grandparents and I know my parents. That was something you simply didn't talk about. You know, every now and then you'd get that little hint of the story of some long distant uncle that you never talk about that killed himself. You know, or some, you know, some remote family member that never entered the conversation, you know, didn't really know why. You know, you might have seen pictures of them all, you know, super happy when they were young or something like that. But you never heard about that uncle. Never heard about that aunt. But every now and then, as you're going through your genealogy, because you're getting old and kind of wondering, you know, where did I come from? You know, trying to trace out everybody. Oh, they killed themselves. Why did they kill themselves? You want to know. Why did that happen? And nobody's going to fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
And they might not even know.
Now, but...
Now they're talking about it. But now is the age of those millennials, when they're the ones that are doing more of the talking. And obviously, it's a lot easier to do all the talking now because we have the internet. Things like this flow like water.
Yes.
So it's an interesting thing. And being that I, you know, my background, as everyone should know by now, is not one tied to any particular dogmatic trait. I think that an individual's rights to their own autonomy is really a pivotal thing about being human. So whether it be pro-choice to figure out what you're going to do about your own body and the things that happen around it, or whether or not it's going to be what happens in and around and on your death. You know, those things, I think they're very personal. And to make a law that makes it illegal to have a personal right seems wrong to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's definitely something that is open to discussion and should be for a long time. I don't think that anything should be taboo anymore. We shouldn't have things that are taboo. Nothing should remain in the closet. We should bring all our junk and baggage out, sort through it amongst people that they have their own baggage. You might find a few matched sets, you know, that old Samsonite bag that's in the trunk there. You know, I might know somebody down the road that has the exact same one, and we both have a story about it. And we would never know unless we brought it out and talked about it. And then we learn. And if we don't bring it out and talk about it, we don't learn anything. And then we don't advance. And then, well,
yeah. Here's, just to throw out a couple compelling reasons why this should be so. What you don't know can hurt you.
Oh, God, yes.
It can absolutely hurt you. And as a, you know, abstinence only has done incalculable harm to many, many, many teenagers who had no idea, what kind of things they'd be getting into, or even how to talk about them, or who to talk about them with. Just to throw that out there. And also, what is common knowledge can never be used against you in a coercive manner.
Right. Yeah. It's no longer leverage if everyone knows.
Yes.
You know, then you have nothing to fear. This is why
you can still be ridiculed for it.
Sure. Yeah.
But you cannot be bribed or extorted.
Yeah.
Over that knowledge.
It takes the power away and gives it back to yourself. It's actually very empowering to unveil your own vulnerabilities. You know, then it becomes a building block as opposed to something that you're trying to hide.
Yeah, it waters them down.
Yeah. Well, like Tim Cook just this week unveiled a fact that probably many of us knew, that he's gay.
No.
Yeah. CEO of Apple. Yeah. Shocking. I know. It's just so shocking and appalling. Not at all. And there are some that have, you know, greeted it with, well, yeah, we knew that.
Corporate whatever. Of Apple of all places.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Amazing.
Bring out the turtleneck.
Now, really, all that says is not that we expect a gay counterculture to exist in Apple. No, that's not what that says. What that says is we have grown to accept that a gay counterculture is widely accepted in the tech industries. It's widely accepted in Google. It is widely accepted in Google, Apple, and Microsoft.
Yeah. You look at, you know, we'll say, we'll call them Big Blue.
IBM.
You know, a company that there's an interview with one of their engineers, I forget which one, but he was sent home his first day on the job because he wasn't wearing sock suspenders.
Oh, dude, come on. No. That's
a guy lifted up his pant leg and checked.
Well, yeah, but that's so long ago.
That is far right wing, just absolute conservative mindset. You know what I'm saying?
I worked for IBM. Okay, this is
back in the day.
That's way back in the day. Okay,
this is way back in the day.
I was just past where I had to wear a 3-piece suit to work. Okay. It has slowly evolved. You used to have a 3-piece suit with the sock suspenders, including bowler hat. Okay? That was part of the wardrobe for anybody that worked there. If you serviced a damn Selectrix typewriter, okay, you had to wear the uniform, which was a 3-piece suit. Full regalia, okay? That doesn't exist anymore, okay? Especially in the research parks. No, those guys are wearing jeans and maybe a polo. Okay. I know. I've been there. So, yeah. So our culture has evolved. And through that evolution, we accept the people are going to be people. And being a person involves some interesting baggage along with, our own sexuality. Our identities, all these things that make us human.
We've become accepting of the spectrum.
Yeah. The full spectrum.
Which is to say, you know, people aren't binary creatures.
No.
They're not hetero. They're not homosexual fully.
No. They are
on a spectrum of that, and they can lean heavily to one side or the other, but there's also people in the middle.
Yeah, Facebook infamously had released an update that allowed you to select, I don't know, what was it, like 33 or more different gender preferences?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's
I think it should just be a slider.
Just a slider? Nice.
On a slider from homosexual to heterosexual, where do you put yourself on the slider switch?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and one of those unique points that you have to kind of work around. So, Tim Cook has identified as gay. He didn't identify as being a homosexual. He identified as being gay. So, with that, yes, well, he's a homosexual, but he's identified as gay. So gay is the label that he has chosen. So calling someone gay is no longer a negative if they've identified themselves in that manner. Now, it's all about tags, and it's all about preferences, the way people want to be referred to.
Yeah.
It's ownership of that identity. And you have to respect somebody's preference for their identity because it is who they are. It's what they're all about.
I don't know any that really prefer to be called a faggot, though.
Well, you know, I just look at a faggot as that's a cigarette butt, isn't it?
A faggot is a small bundle of wood.
It
wasn't quite kindling, but it wasn't quite, you know, it wasn't worthy of being firewood. So
that has nothing to do with sex. In my opinion,
the reason why it started was, you know. They would burn the gay people back in the day, and it was the line du jour was throw them in with the rest of the faggots.
Okay.
Didn't Death Park do an episode with that? They were calling motorcycles, and they were calling basically people annoying, and the annoying and outcast people of the day.
Well, South Park is fantastic for doing things like that.
I don't know, but Louis C.K. did a skit where they explain all that.
Nice. I love how most of our education is coming from comics these days.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, the best information is coming, you know, the best news that you can get these days comes basically out of Cracked.
Cracked and Comedy Central, yeah.
I like the fact that they're actually doing the research and actually making these things that have real information in them.
Like, John Oliver's Last Week Tonight.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's such a fantastic show.
John Oliver, John Stewart, and Stephen Colbert, who's apparently going to go off air on December 18th to take his new job. So no more Colbert Report. Very sad.
Oh, it's still going to be Colbert, though.
They all follow the same format. You know, they're taking real information and they're presenting it in a humorous way. And, you know, the truth is hysterical. It really is funny. These, you know.
Yeah. Well, we have to go back to Oscar Wilde.
If you're going to tell them the truth, make them laugh. Otherwise, they'll kill you.
There you go. We have to. I mean, that's the only thing that works.
If
you tell somebody a straight up truth, or tell somebody a straight up lie in a truthful way, then how can you distinguish what's what? You know, we are in a society right now in an interesting time. You know, that old curse, may you live in interesting times, where the news as presented in the meme fashions and, you know, the little sound bites that we all get and then go viral from there. All these things, they sound really legitimate, or they sound so over the top that they can't possibly be legitimate. And then they merge where the absolute ludicrous shit is exactly what is really happening. And then you can't tell the joke from the truth. And the truth becomes a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where we are.
So if you find yourself being duped by The Onion, by any of these we make stuff up Poe sites out there, don't feel
bad. There's a lot of them now. I got duped just because I didn't know this. I wasn't familiar with this one site.
They're springing up everywhere. And the burden is to try and sort it out and to automatically have your bullshit filter on maximum. And it's so tiring that you just want to believe what you're reading, and you can't.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
I had an interesting debate on the internet the other night, and it was like, you know, okay, so you've thrown out this figure. Where did you get it? Oh, well, here's the Wikipedia page. Well, that's nice and all, but Wikipedia in and of itself is not a legitimate resource. Plus, when I go to their links for where they got this information, it had to do with Brevard County Schools and how many students were in it. And they had two references. One of them took me to a nurse's the reference was a nurse's magazine, and it included page numbers, but what the fuck? And the other one took me to a non-functional link. It was the website no longer had the information on it. And it was, I think it was a CNN article or something like that.
I'm like, I hate dead links and paywalls.
These are not, there is no legitimate information here. We do not know this is fact unless you can provide a credible source.
Yeah, check your sources. Definitely check your sources.
Check your sources.
That's
all I'm asking for.
It's a terrible burden, though.
But that's the burden that journalism is supposed to do for us, and they're not.
No, not at all.
Because the person I was speaking to was a journalist.
Well, what we end up...
was on the radio at that moment talking to people.
Oh, shit. We end up with a lot of citizen journalists, kind of like ourselves. You know, really... We're not being paid for this. We're covering what other people have covered. We try to dig down. We try to do the due diligence, but we'll get duped just like everyone else, including the mainstream media.
We're kind of a fact check and opinion panel.
Yeah, we're the definition would be pundit. You know,
we're pundits.
That's what we're. You know, unpaid blogger pundits.
But we actually fact check, which most pundits don't.
We try to get down to the nitty gritty of it. We actually kind of take the approach of the, at least a little bit, you know, when we have the time, we kind of go the John Oliver route where they expound on one item, you know, in depth, which is why, of course, we go on these long tirades and such tangents, as such as
ironically
this one. Very nice. Touché, sir. Touché. I see what you've done there. We should probably move on.
Should we bring it back? Where were we?
I don't know. Where the fuck
dignity
were we?
Dignity of dying?
We were talking about the dignity of dying. So, that's a long way to go for that one. But,
yeah.
But it's very political and it's religious and it's all these things. There's a lot of things to unpack with death, which is of course why we're talking about it today for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Death is a big thing to unpack. It's got a lot of taboo, a lot of bad things associated with it. And I think that if you make, again, going back to that same thing, if you make something taboo, then you've destroyed the topic of conversation around it.
Yes. And you are shut off the ability to impart information.
Yeah.
And essentially it is the ostrich, put your head in the sand. You don't want to know this information.
Yeah.
Now, granted, there's a timeline of maturity levels, I will call it, where it is inappropriate to share certain information. But
there's
also a timeline where, yes, you need to take the blinders off and say, all right, we're going to discuss this in detail now.
Well, that's a really subjective thing.
That is a subjective thing.
That's really subjective. And
it is subjective, but it's also because everybody's different.
Yeah.
You can't say that at this age, this is what a person should know. These subjects,
okay.
Which we...
Okay. I'm being the only parent on the panel here.
Mm-hmm.
I just today discussed with my elder daughter and slightly with my younger daughter, who's, you know, 4 and a half, what Halloween's about, because they didn't want to go into a little haunted house that's down the street here. And, you know, we're taking something that we fear, and everyone fears death. You know, that's the thing.
Natural.
Yeah, that's natural. And we're making fun of it. We're going to have fun with it. We're taking the power away from it. That's what we're doing. It makes us feel good. We've cheated death. By simply going through the motions, we've cheated death, and that feels great.
Well, we've at least laughed, you know, in the face of it.
Well, it's all a mindset. It's all a mindset. Even to simply laugh at the thing, you've defeated the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, psychologically, that's what you've done. You've overcome it in one way or another. So to overcome death is a really powerful thing. That's why people like to be scared, I think. Because you're scared, and you lived. You won. You survived. You know, you got that endorphin rush. You got all that going for you, and then you live to enjoy it. You know, it's one of those really high kind of feelings, which is why you get adrenaline junkies, of course, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, if they make it, they survive. They get to enjoy all the fruit of their victory.
But just as a counterpoint to this, you know, death is something that it's kind of a subjective matter to when do you discuss this and how do you discuss this? How do you start the conversation?
Some people are not equipped.
One of the other big ones is how, when, why do you discuss sexuality? To what level of detail do you discuss sexuality? And,
yeah,
you know, and how do you approach this subject? You approach this subject, and that's
so much to unpack. So much to unpack there.
that's a loaded one. It is totally loaded.
Yeah. Well, it's all the same.
What approach do you take when you begin?
It's all the same, though. You know, and I approach it from the completely secular kind of attitude, where it's just what happens. It's biology. You know. Sex and death, life, they are all the great circle of life, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we show them pictures of animals dying, you know, of tigers eating some other animal. You know,
just leave Discovery Channel long enough, they'll learn about sex.
That's pretty much what has happened in my house. You know, there have been enough documentaries that have gone on in this house that... my children already know the complete circle of life, and they realize that they too are animals because they have organs. Animals have organs. We must be animals. There you go.
Animals do these things to continue the species.
Yeah. So they...
Logic is a wonderful thing.
Logic is a fantastic thing. If used properly, you can get out of a lot of shit with just using some basic logic. You know, and you know, I really think more people should use it.
It probably would help. So.
It would help. Yeah. But
I think we need more in-depth psychology courses in our lower levels of education.
I don't know if we even need in-depth psychology courses, as we just need psychology courses. Like would do. Any.
This is tangential territory, I know, but I wanted to bring this up because it was one of the 16 impregnants that Claire shared with me today. And the girl was dating a sociopath. Like, when you watch this kid's reactions and you just kind of watched his behavior, she was 16 hours into labor and he was like pushing her over in her hospital bed. Like, you're hogging all the bed, move over. I want Chinese food. I want to go. I don't want to be here. That was just during the labor. Like, there's a whole 30 more minutes of bullshit that occurred that was like, this kid is a sociopath. He is a true, absolute, he does not think of any other person on earth except for himself.
No empathy whatsoever.
If you try to inject yourself into the conversation, he feels like you're trying to pull him over.
Okay, so...
Yeah, it was incredible. It was something to watch. And the girl was like, oh, I'm really hoping that he changes. It's like, no, this isn't just immaturity. Okay, there is something wrong with his reactions.
This is someone you don't fuck.
He is not okay.
Okay, this is someone you don't fuck. Just don't do it. Stay away from them, okay?
Too late.
Yeah, obviously.
No, I think the honestly, the child, she chose to have the child because she was trying to keep him.
Oh, God, no. No.
I really think that's what played out in that scenario.
Oh, David, you hurt my head. You're hurting my head right there.
Yeah. I had to watch it. It was tough to watch.
So I
have to watch this episode.
I see. You're sharing the burden. You're sharing the pain to lessen the pain.
I can't be the only one who knows. You will share my burden.
Okay, I understand that. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry for your loss. So, what you mentioned earlier, you know, I want to go back to, and that's just that, not about the 16 pregnant thing, but what is the age? And, you know, that you start to unravel the mysteries of life to people. And I think that that's a hard thing. I can do it because of whatever point I've reached, and I can divulge these secrets, which aren't secrets. You know, in my opinion, they're not secrets. This is just a fact of life. You ought to know. I can unveil these to my young impressionable daughters and get them over that, you know, right now. But that's me. Other people are simply ill-equipped to deal with it even on their own, much less to share that information with other people. It kind of has to be a generational change.
Right. But it's also, in certain respects, it's imperative to know this information. Because what you don't know can hurt you.
Right. Which is why we definitely need more reality-based education. I'd say reality-based education.
Yeah.
Because the reality is kids are going to fuck. They're going to do
it. They're going to fuck. And
there are consequences to that.
They're going to come into contact with unsavory people who are going to do things that they should not be doing with children.
Right. Yeah.
And if your children are ill-equipped to understand what is happening.
Yeah.
They're just going to be scarred.
Right, yeah. That people do not always have your best interest in mind. Some people are sociopaths and want Chinese food while their baby mama is going through labor.
17 hours.
She
went 27 hours.
That was 17. 27 hours. You know, I might want some Chinese food, too. I don't know if I can really fault him for that.
Yeah, but he was at the I want Chinese food at, like, hour number 6.
Okay, fuck off. Yeah, gotcha. Okay, well... with that, it's hard to really understand where these things are coming from. And it is a matter of, unfortunately, unwrapping all of it. Going down to the core of, why is this the way it is? And people are not prepared to do that. They're not prepared to do that with their own lives, much less the society that they live in. It takes too much effort. They don't want to do it. It takes somebody that, well, stupid like me, that actually wants to dig into all this crap and figure out why it's all this way, and to lose sleep over how this world is then going to end up in my children's hands. It's unpleasant.
You mean what state it will be in? Or
yeah. Well, there's what state it's going to be in, and when they are my age, what are they going to have to face? Yeah. You know, I mean, because they're going to have kids, probably. Maybe they don't have to, obviously, but they're probably going to have kids by this age, and they're going to have to deal with putting them through school. Are they going to have found the right kind of partner to go through that with? Are the schools going to be teaching rational behavior that's going to be beneficial for them? Or are they going to have to take it completely in their own hands and do it on their own? I don't know. I mean, because right now,
what is the state of the school going to be in when your kids are having kids?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's one of those unknowns where it's, you know,
we're in a really interesting phase. Because if I look back at the report cards from my parents, because my parents were crazy and kept all of them in the filing cabinet, so I looked through. You know, by the way, you really ought to do that. If you think you're a poor student and your parents kept their report cards, go back and look at how well they screwed up. And you'll realize, you know, I'm not that bad. I'm okay. I'm doing okay here because my parents screwed up too, and they were human. So I don't have to be perfect. You know, you don't have to be perfect. Just strive for perfection. You don't have to be it.
You just strive, not even perfection, strive to do well.
Yeah.
Do it, quote unquote, right.
Shoot down the middle and really focus on the things that interest you. That seems to work for most people. Just find something that interests you. That's really important. It's really, really very important to find something that interests you. But I don't know what they're going to have to deal with, because I'm not even sure what I'm dealing with right now. I know that in the state of Florida, the Board of Education is a little bit lackluster, but I also know that it's way worse in other states. So I think anywhere you're going to have to make your own changes. You're going to have to bring your children up in an environment that best suits you. But I really have trouble when organizations like Focus on the Family come in and try to mandate certain religious doctrination into schools, where they want to remove science. They want to teach that abstinence-only sexual education, and they don't want to teach it early enough to actually make any difference anyway. You know, that their views are damaging to the society at large, and that is troubling to me. Which is probably why I am the way I am.
Their views are damaging to themselves, but that doesn't stop them from promoting them.
Well, yeah, but it's you don't know that being inside yourself. You know, we could then take this and immediately...
You're in the bubble.
Yeah, we could immediately take this into a philosophical discussion on objective and subjective morality. But that would be another really long tangent.
It would be a really long tangent.
That would be a long
time. We've run out of stories.
I've run out of booze for that discussion. We can talk about that maybe in another 5 episodes when it's a special. Talk about morality. Yeah. How about that? Episode 35, morality?
Morality episode. All right.
That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah. Okay. So, really, that's all that we have for today. As far as news items, as far as Halloween, I don't know that it's gotten anywhere for anybody, but boy, it was an interesting conversation. Again, I am sorry for my voice and the fact that I still have a cough and sniffles and generally feeling under the weather. There's a few reviews and entertainment nitpicks and such. I just recently, since we were talking actually about sexuality and all these life and death matters, Daryl Ray, a psychologist, has come out with a new podcast called Secular Sexuality. I've linked to it in the show notes. And it's really interesting in diving into the way people view their own sexuality and sexuality at large based on the values that they've accumulated young in life, you know, with whether or not it was any particular religious indoctrination, whether it be Catholicism, which is a whole interesting one in and of itself, Christianity, being an Islam, Jehovah's Witness, you know, any of them. They all have their own unique things that they imprint on you about how you interact with the opposite sex. And they do that really early. And it's just, that's the way it is throughout your family. And it's the way your family operates, the way your mother talks to your father and your father talks to your mother and the way they interact with you. All of those things get imprinted on you. And he starts to unpack all that and determine how it has affected you, and perhaps it's affected you poorly. So it's kind of a whole podcast that's about telling you how to fix you from the ground up. It's really interesting. Once you know that you have a problem, then you can maybe start to change it. So some very interesting conversations in there, and even if you are not an atheist, an agnostic, a none of the above, it's still a valuable conversation to have on very taboo topics, which I love. So I highly recommend it. There's 7 episodes out right now, and they're short. They're certainly nothing like the diatribes that we go on. So they're bite size.
Yeah.
David, you got a couple there.
Well, I'll throw out there, you know, I won't add it as a pick, but if people want to look into secular sexuality, they should also look at Dan Savage's Savage Love podcast.
Yes, great companion piece.
And that is if you want to dive into sexuality in a way that is just like, this is, he doesn't step you in. you are diving into the deep end of the pool for sexuality when you listen to his podcast. So
there's no lube, no reach around. It's all there. There's
no lube, no reach around. He'll talk about lube and no reach around.
That's true. He will
talk about people fucking, and he will go into detail about how people fuck and all the different ways in which this happens, yep, and all the combinations that this happens. Man, woman, man, man, woman, man, woman, woman, man, woman, woman, man, woman, man, yeah, woman, etc. Trannies, that's all of it. Everything there is to talk about regarding sex, he fields those questions. And they're all pretty much questions from his listeners. And most of them are heterosexual because most people are heterosexual.
Yeah, it's a law of averages.
It's a law of averages. So even though he's a big gay commentator, you know, he feels the heterosexual questions. So
yeah,
there's something for everybody to learn, and there's like hundreds of episodes. And they are about, I think, 30 minutes apiece.
Yeah, so, again, nice bite-sized chunks of really good, solid entertainment as well as edutainment.
It is edutainment.
Edutainment. We're a big fan of edutainment around here.
So we added the pick of the book Games People Play. So there's a link to that if you want to check into that. Find out things about yourself that you may not necessarily like, things about your friends and family that you may not necessarily like, and also it includes discussion of how do you beat these games. If you find yourself in one, Where's your exit? How do you break this cycle? Where's the winning chess move, if you will? It includes that for a lot of these games as well.
Yeah,
so
just keep in mind your mileage may vary.
Your mileage, your personal mileage may vary. Your personal experience with different people is going to vary. So your experience with different types of games is going to vary. But you know, if you've lived a you know, varied and sundry kind of life, you will find in your own memory stuff that people have done that fits into these molds and stuff that you have done that fits into these molds and things you may want to think about changing about yourself. And, you know, knowledge is power. Learn how to identify it. Learn how to break the cycle for yourself so you're not continuously stuck in the same game over and over and over.
Always good to try and improve yourself.
Always try to improve yourself. There's always room for improvement. And if you think you're perfect, you should probably seek help because you are not. I assure you of that.
Absolutely.
But for as near as I can tell, these are the perfect shooting goggles.
They also look very fashionable.
They are very fashionable. Very fashionable.
Very Chronicles of Riddick kind of thing.
They are kind of Chronicles of Riddick looking. They have an actual foam seal that seals against your face. They are double pane, not fog proof, but extremely fog resistant. I did the research on the reviews and these things. They're $20, which is a good price.
Oh, that is good.
For double pane, super fog resistant goggles. There's guys who have tested them basically in the swamps of Florida and have found them to be, you know, satisfactory for preventing fog while wearing these outdoors in the Florida summers, which is 100% humidity, 90 plus degrees. And there was a dude who used these in Alaska to protect his eyes while he was fueling heavy equipment. So he would be in his truck, he'd jump out, fuel a piece of equipment, and then jump back in. He found that in negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit, he had about 20 or 30 minutes of wearing these outside before they started to fog up. But after 20 or 30 minutes of being outside in negative 50 degrees, you want to get to a place of warmth anyway.
Truth.
Truth. There's truthiness in there. But for $20, they're comfortable. They have not fogged for me. They've been great.
So when you say shooting goggles,
these are Z87 approved polycarbonate lenses. They will stop a nail from a nail gun at point blank range.
Okay, so not only are
these are protective.
They're straight up protective goggles.
These are PPE.
Excellent, excellent. That's what I wanted to know. Because
personal protective equipment.
That's the kind of thing that I would wear on a construction site. Because you get nice clear vision there. You got that anti-bluing coating on it.
Well, this is just an amber coating.
Yeah.
And what I found with the amber coating is that it actually makes things brighter.
Right, because what the amber does is it cuts down on the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And everything just seems to pop.
Everything seems to pop, including the sun. You don't want...
No, don't look at the sun.
These are not sunglasses, okay? When it makes the sun more intense to look at.
Yeah, there was a...
You shouldn't be looking at it without eye protection anyway, but this is like...
There's one of those as-seen-on-TV things, those blue blockers. Remember those from the 90s and 2000s?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's basically the same deal. It's just yellow coating. It makes everything HD vision. I think that was another thing that they called
HD vision.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that, in darker environments, everything appears lighter. You know, you see more. You recognize more in your environment.
Yeah. And anything you, and basically anything you put on
daylight comes, you're probably going to want a different lens.
Yeah, but anything also, well, pretty much anything that you put on your face over your eyes is going to limit the bad UV from getting to you. So it is a little bit better, but still you go blind. So. Yeah. Use carefully, and I'm sure that you could probably get some that have some sort of tinting on them or something like that.
Oh, yes. They have a whole assortment of different tints. They've got clear yellow. Let's see. They've got a gray lens. They have a mirror lens. And they have a – I don't know what the difference is between silver and mirror lens.
level of mirror?
I guess. But they're.
Do you want to look like Daft Punk? You get the true mirror ones. Yeah, I don't know.
But they range in price. They're all right around $20. $19-$20.
That's pretty good. It's the anti-fog thing that I'm really interested in.
Yeah, the anti-fog so far in my experience works. It just works. They have not fogged at it for me at all.
That's good. That's good. Sometimes I feel like I'm actually breathing out of my eyeballs. I mean, just like any glasses that I put on, like just like immediately fogged. Like somehow I have heat vision. So weird.
Yeah, I put these in my refrigerator and then walked outside, and it's been hot outside lately, and they did not fog. So.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was. I'm a believer.
From fridged out, okay.
From fridge to onto face, which is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Period around the eyes is kind of sensitive to temperatures, but
yeah, maybe just a wee bit there. And Don, you got to pick Peter F. Hamilton's The Night's Dawn series, The Reality Dysfunction.
Yeah, this one I was listening to, or I've been listening to for a little while now. And it kind of goes along with the whole death thing, and it puts forward an option of if when we die, we don't go, there is no heaven, hell, there's no reincarnation or whatever, there's just your souls go somewhere. But this comes in later on, and people start getting possessed by the dead. Hmm. One of the characters that comes back is Al Capone.
Whoa!
He comes back in the second. So.
Oh well, spoiler alert.
Yeah. overall, the series. I mean, I'm only on the second book. It is a little slow. It's harder to follow than his other ones, but it's. I'm still staying into it. And
yeah. I have noticed with Hamilton's work, sometimes a second read really helps.
Yeah.
Really helps. He just has such depth. So many different overlapping stories and characters just interwoven in there that it's a tangled mess sometimes.
This one, I think he's jumbled it up a lot more than in the past, and the other ones. This one's almost a little too jumbled and a little too. I think that's my problem with it. It's turning into more like a soap opera, where you get little stories here, and he just keeps cycling through, and kind of lose track of the overall picture. But I know this is a big picture, so.
So I think it's all about it's all about the big picture, yeah.
But anyway, it goes along. It has the whole everybody possession. Everybody's getting possessed, and that becomes a problem.
That could be a bit of a problem. Yeah. I've noticed definitely that there's some authors that it's almost like a video game. There's replay value. You know, you get to go through it, and it's like that's what he was talking about as you go back through it again and again. So
the little details that are hard to keep track of sometimes because there's so many. Why did he talk about that clock on the shelf?
I didn't realize that was foreshadowing.
Son of a bitch.
Exactly. Yeah. All that fun stuff.
Exactly.
I love it. Yeah. So I'll definitely have to put that in the rotation. So Peter F. Hamilton's The Night's Dawn series, Reality Dysfunction. Cool stuff. Cool stuff. So next week we're going to be talking about crap. Who knows what? And until then, we bid thee adieu. Have a wonderful, safe Halloween weekend. Goodbye,
enjoy
everybody.
Your festivities, whatever you call them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Folks. Bye, everybody.
That's it for us tonight. We hope you've enjoyed the show as much as we've enjoyed making it. This is the part where I beg for audience participation. Head over to orellyradio.com, that's O-R-L-Y radio.com, and participate in the live stream. Chat with us during the show on our IRC, and if you have topic ideas, email them to us at orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at 470-222-4444. ORLY6759, and post and vote on stories on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/oreallyradio. And if that wasn't enough, we're all over the web. Check out our Facebook page, our Twitter, our Tumblr, our Google Plus, and even video of the show archived at youtube.com. Consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, or if you really love us, I mean really love us, consider help offset the cost of the show by contributing on our Patreon page, accessible through the Help Us link on our homepage. We really can't thank you enough for spending time with us. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. Music Rocket and Pangea provided by Kevin MacLeod at incomptech.com.
And the broadcast has been successfully terminated. There we go.
It's in the can.
It's in the can. So sad.
I had to do that for Mike.
Yeah, so sad that he couldn't make it.